Hello, my babies, and welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy. I'm Joe Stapleton. He's my work wife, James Hardigan.
Happy summer special number one, Joe. It's late June 2024.
I'm not so sure how happy it is, because coming up on today's show, we are sorry. I need to scroll back
on Discord several months, possibly a year, and find the name of the person who brought up this movie.
Yeah, this might be the most sorry we've ever been for a Poker Movie Monday recorded on a Wednesday and released sometime later in the future. You know that I'm reluctant to trash movies on this podcast anymore, given how many friends and acquaintances and people, you know, who work in the industry and how hard it is to...
Oh, no, fuck that. If someone turns out a piece of shit like this, you need to call it as it is.
So, Gutshot Straight is the piece of shit to which James is referring to. It's the movie that not only did we rope you into watching it, we roped one of my very successful, very, very, very busy friends into watching it. Superstar NBA tweeter and police chase thought leader Rob Perez, a.k.a. Worldwide Wob, is on the show today. And sadly, we also forced him to watch this movie. We forced many people in the audience to watch this movie. But sadly, only one of you is going to be able to win a prize from it, idiots. This week's super fan is Logan Hunt, and he's at least got a shot to get something for his troubles. The rest of us, I'm not so sure. So let's just get into it. And first, we'll do that by meeting our guest.
Let's do that. Rob Perez, welcome to Poker in the Ears.
Thanks for having me.
Dude.
So even before we get to... This is meant to be a poker show or about movies about poker. And the movie that I just watched, you considered a poker movie? Or is it just a movie that has poker?
This is a great place to start.
Yes. So what constitutes a poker movie? Well, when you're starting, when you're in your first 100 episodes, you've got your Rounders, your Cincinnati Kids. As time goes on, you start to get more desperate. If a movie has a poker-like name and features someone playing a version of poker, yes, 100% it's a poker movie, and we're talking about it on this podcast. Welcome to our analysis of Gutshot Straight.
You've brought on a guest that knows very, very little about the program of its entirety. So couldn't you have just sent me that one scene of poker instead of watching, wasting 90 minutes of my life? Or is this also meant to be a show that discusses worst movies of all?
Don't worry. We're discussing the entire movie.
Yeah.
Yes, we will discuss the single hand of poker played in this film. But we're going to go through this pretty much scene by scene because we need to get some value out of the 90 minutes, actually 88 minutes if I'm going to be accurate, that we gave up of our lives.
So I just wanted to read a tweet from, sorry, not a tweet, a text I got from Rob yesterday that said, "Cannot believe you just made me watch that. Speechless, the worst movie I've ever seen, and I've watched Meet the Spartans voluntarily before."
Before we get into the movie, what do we need to know about Rob, Joe?
Yes, well, I think I would like to Rob, like basically what happens is this. I say we're going to have Rob on the show and then a couple of people understandably freak out because they can't believe we know each other. So I would like to give Rob an opportunity just to explain what it is that he does, because I think it's a newer job. It's a sort of thing that didn't exist 20 years ago, really, did it?
I guess it did, just in different forms. But long story short, I cover the NBA as a content producer. That's what I tell girls at the bar when they ask for your occupation and you don't want to sound like an asshole. So I don't really think of myself as an influencer. I don't think of myself as an NBA analyst, maybe somewhere in between.
Pundit? Are you comfortable with pundit?
Pundit? Yeah, I could go with pundit. Even though those are usually like, yeah, there's a lot of opinion-based content that's being built, but I tend to think that I can be a little bit more creative and or outside the box with what it is I've been doing for the past decade plus. Some people know me for certain things, but you know, you get enough of those together and they're like, oh, he does other stuff as well. So once again, long story short, I do cover the NBA. However, I do play and watch more poker than probably NBA. I mean, I just came from a game, which is why I have bags under my eyes. And I'm always out there in these streets, but I don't tweet about those things publicly to my million plus followers, because I just haven't made the transition yet into creating poker content or something that is different than what's currently being created. So poker is, of course, a passion of mine. NBA is the business, though.
So would you want to be a poker content creator, or do you like just having that be just for fun?
I would, but I need to find an angle. Like the whole reason why I have a career in the NBA is because I found niches that were unoccupied. So I need to find a way to get in there that's not already, like, there's great vloggers already. There are just tournament players that are recapping hands, getting into the analysis of GTO and stuff. That have established themselves for years and years and written books. You can't see it in the background, but I got Super System in the bookcase right here. You know, a lot of these things have been done already. So I would be looking for a way to get in that if I get to that point that it just no one else is doing.
Sure.
And if it was that easy to think of, they'd already be doing it. Right.
Yeah.
So,
man.
You know, so of course, aspiring content creator that's always looking for new avenues with a passion for poker, probably what I do with my free time more than anything, but that's where I'm at today.
And you have played on Hustler a few times, right? Or Live at the Bike, which ones?
Yeah, I've done, my public streams are on Hustler. I think I've done 5 or 6 total sessions publicly. I go down there playing the 5, 10, 20 game, you know, just in the bullpen or some of their non-streamed games as well, but bouncing around Los Angeles, hitting various home games, and you build a reputation for yourself as someone that gives action. You all of a sudden, the invites start pouring in. Everyone wants to play with you, right? It's funny how that works. So, I'd say much more privately my poker consumption, but if you started asking around some of the home games here, I'm sure my name would be a common denominator.
Sure. Rob's invited me to some very cool sounding games, and I just haven't been able to go just yet. One time I could have gone, and then I heard how big the gameplay is, and I was like, ah.
Yeah, it's the games, yeah, you know, this tapes, like they advertise, for example, 5, 10, 20. And then, I mean, I'm a heavy poker tequila drinker. So usually I am very good at coercing people to join me, which means an hour later, those stakes are going up to 10, 20, 40 to with a straddle and 80. And that game, you know, gets big. So you have to go into those games assuming that the stakes are going to double by the end of the night.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to need to call them the big guns, the stakers, the backers for that game.
So you are the kind of guy who goes in looking at that 200, 400 game thinking, yeah, this could be my time, which brings us on to the movie Gutshot Straight, which bizarrely in the UK is just called Gutshot. And I don't know if you had the same opening credits that I had, but in my version, Steven Seagal is not credited. He is not in the opening credits as a listed actor, which surprised me because he has a reasonably decent role in the film. And I think the most surprising thing for me, when you consider we're talking about Seagal here, is he is not the worst thing about this film. That is saying something. Because normally he can take any piece of shit and make it even worse. This, he actually, if anything, I can't believe I'm even saying this, maybe even elevates it slightly.
He's, in my opinion, in this movie, he's doing like the Danny Aiello impression from The Professional. He has four scenes, three of which he's seated, which I thought was a part of his contract that he has to be sitting in every movie.
Absolutely.
He wasn't as fat as I was expecting him to be. He was actually looking more like himself than some of the recent photos I'd seen. But yes, he's not the worst part about this. Rob, what was your impression of Seagal coming into this?
They put him on a pedestal without I don't feel like I'm spoiling the movie by any means for
No.
I'm trying to save people from watching it, but
100%.
Usually in these type of movies where you introduce a character in the first couple of scenes and then bring them back only in the final minutes, they have some like evergreen value and or A-list type of magnitude in that their presence in only that little amount of time will just supersede and engulf everything else that has occurred in the movie. And they bring him back like I cared, you know, at the very end, like we cared about his character. Like there was that we only have to show you 5 minutes of character development because we already assume that you know when we get to him later in the movie, we don't need to re-educate you. I mean, they bring him back and I'm like, what is he doing back here? You know, that was my feeling. And I Can we just use this as a segue, please? Because I have so much to just get off my chest.
Please,
in the,
go.
If we're using the first couple minutes in first impressions, the very first scene, Steven Seagal's accent is a combination of Don Corleone in The Godfather. And also, James, you may not know this, but in New York, there's a very famous sports radio station called WFAN, The Fan. And you get people from Staten Island and LaGuardia calling in with these very thick New York accents that are talking baseball, Yankees, the Knicks, like the prototypical New York, you know, city dweller. And I mean that with all compliments. The combination of this accent, first he starts off with like, you go against the family, and then he drops like LaGuardia on you, and I wanted to throw up. I'm like, pick a side, bro. It's unbelievable how he just goes back and forth with his voice and no one laughs on set. How many takes did that require?
I did notice
that. The irony is this is not Seagal at his worst. There are three cliches of every Seagal movie. Joe, you've already picked up on one of them. He sits. He doesn't like to stand. Number two, there's a strip club scene in every single one of his movies. This is no exception. We'll come to that later. But the third is that he mumbles and you can't understand a thing he says. I actually thought his dialogue was kind of 6 out of 10. I could make out most words he was saying.
Yeah, I did agree with, I think that Rob, so I don't know, I know James is familiar with this. I thought that Seagal was doing Danny Aiello from The Professional, and also this part could have been played by Perry Caravello from Windy City Heat. I don't know if you know who Scary Perry is, but it's this fucking, it's this comedy that these guys made like in the early 2000s where they took this really awful actor in LA and they convinced him he was starring in an action movie, and he does this weird New York kind of like whatever, acting like a tough guy thing. And it's so bad. And that's really what Seagal reminded me of here. I want to talk a little bit about how we qualify poker movies. This, we didn't know going in, right? We already talked about this. We hadn't seen this movie. It was suggested to us. To me, even though I am all for a very loose interpretation of what is a poker movie, this doesn't hit it for me. Even that poker face movie that Russell Crowe was in, even though that only had one hand of poker in it, at least it had a full hand of poker in it. Like this, to my knowledge, now again, once a movie's this bad, I'm kind of in and out. I'm not going to lie. This only had river action, right?
It did indeed. But crucially, it's called Gutshot Straight. He had a gutshot straight draw, and he made his gutshot straight on the river, and he slow rolls someone with a really unfunny joke.
Yes. That, go on.
Okay. It's now that we can talk about the poker hand.
Yes.
He did, first of all, he didn't even have the nuts. He had the second nuts. He hit the second gutter. You could have hit, if I'm not mistaken, it was queen 8-9 on the board. He could have had jack or jack 9, jack 10 or something. He was slow rolling and he could have been beat. I was waiting for her to be like, well, I have the actual nuts while he was delivering. And then he was going to go bust. And then the whole movie was him trying to make up for that, losing all that money that I think he had just taken as a loan or something. Who knows where that shit came from?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also, he doesn't have the complete nuts. I'll double check that, but I'm pretty sure when I saw
that. I think you're right.
Number two, they're playing 200, 400 in the middle of a El Cortez.
So this confused me at first too. So what happened was
when he says the usual, he
means I'm going to go play 1-2. He doesn't actually go play 200-400.
He's seeing Stephen Lang playing in the 200-400 game, and he's like, one day I'll play in that game. But he is in his usual game, which is obviously much smaller stakes. By the way, can I just point out that Stephen Lang and Ted Levine deserve so much better than this film?
Ted Levine,
I don't know how
Stephen
the hell
Lang doesn't
they got
impress
roped
me
into this.
In this movie. But Ted Levine is excellent. He has nothing to work with and is like still acting the shit out of it. I actually did quite enjoy Ted in this movie. I found him to be menacing and realistic, unlike anyone else. This is Rob shaking his head.
No, I mean, I'm going to need more than whatever the allotted time is for this podcast to just go through all of the discrepancies.
Oh,
when he drops the 50, I'm sorry to cut you off, James, but I just got to get this off my chest. When he drops the duffel bag on the floor, I think it's right after that poker game. Do you know what $50,000 looks like? And it's all in small bills. If you look at it,
that cracked me up. It was a 20. It was a 20 on the outside.
You saw
a
bunch of like 20s all crumpled up. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
So, yes.
So I did write down the board. It is Queen Jack 874. So you're right. 910 is also a straight there.
So to Rob's point, one of the biggest errors this movie makes is it takes things that are bad and then does the worst version of it also. Like what Rob says here is if he gets beat in this hand, then you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of clever. He doesn't actually have the nuts, but he does it. He gives a woman a speech before calling his suck out, before slow rolling her, which immediately, if you know poker, makes this the most unlikable dude imaginable. And I think we're supposed to like him.
But to be clear, I think he's been unlikable from the very start. So we've already alluded to the fact there's that weird pre-credit scene, which is a cut-down version of a scene from later in the movie. After the credits, everything we see about this guy, I'm just like, asshole. That weird interaction with the cocktail server, Stacy, where he's like, yeah, I don't know your name. And then he sits down in the game and he tells this unfunny story and slow rolls this woman. It's like, I want this guy to die. If he owes Steven Seagal money, I want Vinnie Jones not to come to his house and punch him in the face, but to literally kill him. He is not a likable loser by any stretch of the imagination. He's an anti-hero, and that makes the movie not work on any level, because how are you supposed to root for him?
I genuinely think that they think you are rooting for him at this point.
He's meant to be charming?
I think that that's supposed to be charming, him not remembering a toots or whatever he calls her, hey, sweetheart, in the speech. And when he goes, if we could just move on, there is actually a second hand of poker in this right after that, where he's playing video poker.
Oh, yes.
He keeps a three and a five and leaves the ace. To me, that's a bigger problem than any other thing I've seen. What guy is sitting like what? Do your research, people. Puking at this video poker scene.
I'm guessing they did not have a video poker consultant on this movie. There's also the whole thing about him being a deadbeat dad. There's the whole thing about where he's horribly flirting with the woman at the loan place. There is nothing about this character that is likable or charming. I don't know the actor. I think he's from some procedural, right? Like CSI or something. But
he's the CSI guy. Right, of course. Okay, now that makes sense.
But this, to me, is the biggest fail of the movie, is that your lead character... I mean, I might be in a minority here. Rob, what did you think of George Eads as the leading man?
They certainly tried to build, speaking of character development, I mean, they did a good job of, this guy is broke, but he's also aspiring Mike from Rounders, and he's willing to get in deep, and somehow he hooks up with some of the hottest girls I've seen in movies just instantly by showing up to some house. So I'm right there with you guys. I'm back and forth whether I should like this guy or hate this guy. And by the time the movie ends, I still am not able to answer that question.
He also seems to, as we move on through the movie, stand up for himself during times when he should probably just lay down and give up in spots. I guess maybe it's a poker metaphor where he gives up in spots where he should definitely be acting more heroic. Like he fails in every possible way in this movie to have any sort of agency or autonomy except to make bad decisions.
So he, the part that drives where I was about to turn it off was when I think he goes for I was going to try and cancel on you guys tomorrow too. That's how bad this movie was, that he goes to some credit lender or cash advance.
Yes.
And he owes money. So instead of paying his debt, he's hitting on the cashier, I guess, the girl that's at the window.
Correct.
Bring her what? Pancakes or let's go eat dessert.
Dessert.
And then
yeah.
You'll just wipe my credit clean under the table. And that she was flattered by it, even though she knew she couldn't do it. That she was like, oh, that's an adorable attempt. Like that made me want to throw my second tier iPad through the window that I was watching this movie on.
I'm of the opinion that this movie was probably written by a teenage boy and not a particularly literate one. Which I guess brings us on to the scene at Deja Vu, the strip club. So having met this guy Duffy at the casino, right, who was playing in the 200-400 game, this is Stephen Lang's character, who's alluring and is promising him amazing opportunities and maybe he'll stake him in a high-stakes game. He ends up meeting Duffy at the strip club. And by the way, if anyone is out there thinking, whatever happened to Tia Carrera after True Lies in the Wayne's World movies, she has a small role as a stripper who he fails to buy a drink for.
So if
at the Deja Vu
if
club.
I could step in here, Tia Carrera is at least one person in this movie that does have a Hendon Mob page. Now, she has no scores listed on it, but Tia Carrera is like a perennial poker charity celebrity event attendee. I've played many charity events where Tia Carrera has been there. She's actually, according to Hendon Mob, the 20,000th, 120th most popular poker player in the world. So does have some poker relevance here. Also wanted to mention that the young lady from the check cashing place has a connection to our guest from a few weeks ago, Jennifer Tilly. That actress is named Fiona Dourif, who is in the Chucky show with Jennifer.
Okay.
So just some poker connections, Rob, to make it a little more relevant.
Can I ask a question, James and Joe? If a girl comes, if you offer a girl a drink at the bar and her response is double vodka, like this one was, what does that imply to you? Does that mean I'm just trying to get wasted off of your dime? I'm trying to go home within the next 15 minutes. I have issues, which we will get to later in the night if you make it that far in conversation. What does someone ordering a double vodka on the rocks in a strip club mean?
That means to me, like, oh, you're offering that I'm going to get the biggest drink imaginable. Like, I'm gonna double up on your generosity. So which leads me to my note I have here. So what I did during this movie is I wrote a bunch of things down that I assumed that, like, a normal person watching this, like someone who liked this movie, would. So I wrote, when I heard the line, I play people, nice. Boobs, nice. When she says, I'll have a double vodka, and then he goes, I didn't say I would pay for it, nice.
I said I would get it for you.
Yeah, I said I would get it for you, but I didn't say I would pay for it, nice. When he goes, I'm on wife number four, nice. Like, these are, like, all these lines that I imagine, like, this screenwriter just, like, punching the air and being like, yeah, I never said I would pay for it. Boom.
When you say screenwriter, you mean the teenage boy who put this to paper.
Yeah, sure, fine.
And with the extended, really awkward scene with these strippers in this club as Duffy's coming up with all these really weird, random bets.
So, okay, again, to this point here, the prop bet scene. Again, this was like a missed opportunity. This scene does not work at all because the guy is clearly coming up with prop bets that no one would ever think of unless you can already do them. So the way you fix this scene is that if fucking, what's even the main character's name? Jack.
Jack.
If Jack said, I bet I can open this bottle of beer with those bills right there, automatically the scene kind of works a little bit. I bet I can, what was the second one? Whatever it was, like I bet I can break a bottle with my bare hands. But when it's the guy betting you that you can't do those things, like, it doesn't make any sense. It's so dumb. It just doesn't even make sense on like a logic level.
I return you to my earlier comment. The teenage boy is barely literate. Don't expect too much from this movie. But things then escalate because we go back to Duffy's place and we have the ultimate
Rob's head
prop
in
bet.
His hands.
Hey, 10K to fuck that hot woman, 20K if I can watch. No way, man. And he gets... Do I remember this correctly? He gets knocked out and pushed into the pool not once, but twice?
Well, one time he gets knocked out. So what happens is he says, no, I won't do that. Which, by the way, doesn't seem like that big of an ethical quandary. Like, he acts like he's being asked to murder the woman when he says he won't have sex with a man's wife in front of him. Help a guy out. Have sex with his wife. Get your 20 large. Get your bag. I don't know. It doesn't seem that big a deal to me. But then when he refuses, the guy punches him and knocks him out into the pool. Sorry, pushes him in the pool, which they act like is maybe the greatest act of violence that's ever occurred. It's in slow motion. It takes about 45 seconds.
Every time someone ends up in the water, it's in slow motion.
And so I found that one of the things about this movie is that so much of this movie seemed to me to be about extending the screen time of this movie to get it to 88 minutes. The slow motion, the constant repetition of things that we just saw 5 minutes ago, the scene where he goes to start his car and it takes him 4 or 5 tries to start it, like, all in one shot. Like, what is the point of all of this?
I've written down, I just feel like I've watched 5 minutes of him trying to start his car. Yes. I mean, I'm not sure how long it actually was, but it felt like 5 minutes.
So this pool scene, he gets pushed into the pool. When he tries to get out, then the guy punches him in the face. Then he goes back out to the pool where the wife is. She pulls him into the water. The husband wakes up. So much is happening in this house over the course of the movie that the people there are unaware of somehow, even though it's a big, cavernous, empty house. What I wrote down at this part, I wrote pool scene why, and then I wrote, so far the best part about this movie is that I used my Star subscription for the first time since the Party Down reboot season ended. That's all I could find.
I know. I'm getting the idea that Rob is a big fan of all the antics that take place around this infinity pool.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I was going to ask, how did you guys even watch this movie? How did you find it? It sounds like you had to get a subscription. Stars?
I mean, I have a subscription 97? To Stars already.
I paid 99 British pence to rent this movie from the Apple store.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't giving them a dime. I'm using B-Flix, just pirating this movie. Every movie on Earth there. I'm like, I will watch this on B-Flix if they have it before I even agree to doing this.
Just to be clear, I will be presenting this cost to His Majesty's Revenue and Customs as a business expense.
Okay, fair enough. So I think the original question, James, that you had was, at this point, what am I thinking about the pool scene?
Yeah.
I'm thinking the guy that we just discussed 5 minutes eating pancakes with him or whatever it was to clear a debt that I imagine was a couple hundred dollars is now having an ethical dilemma about hooking up with the hottest girl that I have seen in a movie in quite some time for $30,000.
Yeah.
It didn't. What are we doing? I mean,
what I mean about him suddenly having some of this hero ethics in a moment where no one would begrudge him for not, and then being a total coward later on and not being able to have any hero qualities whatsoever. I was just as confused by this. I'm also just confused by the pacing of this. So he wakes up on a bench. The wife's washed all of his clothes. She's in the pool. He still hasn't fled the scene. Like, wouldn't you just get the fuck out of there at that point? Like, would you really be fucking with whatever just happened?
No, because he wants to go back and compliment her on how well she dried his clothes.
Yes. And then when he says the line, "Where did Captain Charming go?" That was another nice moment for me.
You asked why they didn't leave, because they spent about 4 minutes in a 1988 Volvo where the door wouldn't work and the car didn't start. And they're having this serious conversation about what to do with the body, what to do with, like, how are we going to go on living the rest of our lives? And they spend, I was going to pull out my stopwatch, almost 25 to 30 seconds trying to get out of this car because you can't door handle. It just, that scene never stops.
So yes, you have obviously revealed the fact that Duffy is killed because he does reappear, this time with a bag with $50,000 in it and a gun. And Jack is so offended at the suggestion that he should take this money to have sex with this woman that he gets into a fight with the guy. He hits his head on a plant pot. He's dead. They have to get rid of the money because we're dealing with some serious people, right? We don't know who they are, but they're bad.
Do you have any idea the kind of people we're dealing with? Nice.
And of course, to make things more complicated, he leaves his wallet behind, which means he has to go back to the house after walking around downtown, which is the most hilarious scene in the movie, by the way, because they clearly tried to do this without a permit.
Yes.
And so tourists are seeing that someone's walking around with a camera and they're practically holding up signs saying, "Hi, Mom."
Yeah, they're looking right down the barrel of the camera, which is hilarious. I didn't realize he left his wallet there. Okay, so that's
why he goes back, and that's when he runs into Ted Levine, Lewis, Duffy's brother. And I don't understand why he can't just act normal in this scene. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, in terms of playing it like a little bit kind of like nervous or a little bit suspicious, I mean, it's melodramatically like, "Oh my God, am I giving away that I killed your brother?" I mean, it's just atrocious. And
I was going to say, this is the scene that made me really regret not going out and picketing with the writers on strike, the actors on strike, because I asked myself out and watched this by myself. And I said, how does a movie like this get made? And I paused it to think for a second. Is it because Seagal has a connection to a studio that they just were willing to fund one of his pet projects that was written by his 14-year-old cousin. How does a movie like this get made? Because I know there's an executive. I don't know if it went into theaters at some point. It eventually got released to the public. How does it pass through the corporate red tape of multiple VPs with budgets and production crews and human resources sign off on this as the final product, right? And if that happens, then the system clearly has to be broken, right? Because there is no explanation other than this being some form of either nepotism, a favor, and or like the people that were on this movie with credits are going to have to avoid their future employer, like going back and watching some of their previous work. It is detrimental in every facet of the Hollywood industry. So I should have been out there. I should have gone all the way up to the Studio City and marched, knowing that movies like this can be made. And then I started playing the movie again.
I don't want to ruin that speech, but how movies like this get made is this, is that you basically have a script and you go, we have Steven Seagal, this movie's going to cost $5 million to make, Steven Seagal's going to be in it, and they just know from like metrics that this movie will make its money back.
Correct.
Like almost a slam dunk, like almost 100% it's going to make its money back because it has Vinnie Jones, Steven Seagal in it, even in small parts, because distribution is so cheap now.
It's set in Vegas. It has the underworld. It has gambling. It has sex. There's a strip club.
There's
it has
a solver.
Murder.
There's like a solver they plug all these things into, and it tells them, like, oh, this movie's going to make $8 million.
So Duffy's been killed. The body's been disposed of. Lewis appears, and I still maintain I think Ted Levine is pretty good in this movie. He's definitely kind of like out acting everyone else in this movie. So the whole premise is he wants to get rid of the girl. The girl wants to get rid of him. And Jack's caught in the middle because she wants him to kill Lewis. Lewis wants him to kill the girl. And which way is he going to go? Who is he going to kill? And now we get the full version of the scene that was at the very beginning of the movie, shown as a kind of preview, where he goes to see Seagal to get a gun. Can I just say at this point, this is the only thing I thought was remotely interesting or good about this film, was I thought it was really weird when Seagal says to him, make sure you get this gun into Lewis's hand. And I didn't really understand that, like to get his prints on it. Are they going to make it look like it was suicide? And spoiler alert, to cut forward to a scene in the movie, because the gun has been doctored to fire backwards. I actually thought that was a pretty neat twist.
I didn't notice that at all.
Creative thinking. Who would have thought? I mean, the one scene where it backfires, Stapes.
Yeah, the thing is, so maybe they were finally clever and I didn't notice it. I didn't understand what happened in that scene. I thought that Seagal shot him from off screen.
Me too. And I thought she got hit from like behind while she was shooting.
Yeah.
No. Seagal is very specific when he gives him the gun, because obviously he's decided he's going to kill Lewis. He's not going to kill the girl, even though the girl inexplicably turns on him at the end of the film. And he specifically says, make sure you get the gun into Lewis's hand. The whole idea is that it's a doctored gun. It backfires. That's what happens in that scene.
So,
but clearly they didn't do a very good job of portraying that, if you guys missed that.
Absolutely not. But now, before all that happened, I don't know if you guys noticed, there was a pretty cool Easter egg in this movie. When Ted Levine walks into the house and picks up the dog, that's the first time that Ted and that dog have been in a scene together since Silence of the Lambs. That was the dog from the bottom of the well. That was the put the lotion in the basket. That was a really nice little inside movie connection right there. I don't know if you guys picked up on that or not.
Yeah, I wasn't told that this was meant to be the true sequel to Silence of the Lambs. I must have missed that message. But
I would like to highlight the other Hannibal Lecter connection to this movie is Stephen Lang. Duffy was Freddie Lowndes in the original version of Red Dragon, the Michael Mann movie,
nice.
Manhunter. So you got a couple of characters from that universe walking around in this movie.
Nice.
Yes, carry on, Rob. Sorry.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, you guys are right that I'm sure they could put a trailer together that was 90 seconds long that made this look like it was going to be an Oscar-worthy film, and that's how they sell it, because pitch meetings have been sold for much less than an actual completed trailer, and that girl is super hot. I think we even saw her tits at some point. Like, that's enough to just get people in the door and get them to watch this. So it wasn't a complete and utter loss. I was trying to figure out how it ends up with 5.1 rating on like IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes. And as soon as you see that girl naked, you're like, oh, well, that's probably the explanation. But as for the plot, like even still talking with you guys now for 30 plus minutes, I still just have no clue. Was this all over just a small loan from the broke guy that he owed from a poker game? Is that how this domino effect occurred?
The implication is he owes money to Seagal, and Vinnie Jones is obviously trying to collect on behalf. But for reasons that are unclear, Seagal says he likes Jack, and therefore he doesn't really want him to kill him, rough him up a bit to get the money. But I like him, and what does he say at the start? You're a fucking card player, Jack, and not even a good one. But for some reason, he's kind of like has a soft spot for him. And I don't understand, by the way, and I really shouldn't be questioning the plot of a piece of shit movie like this, but why does Seagal show up at the end? Why is he there?
Why did he wait for the exact time for that gun to backfire when he could have just like solved that instantly by opening the door when no one was looking and just wiped the room clean? They were stage left waiting for their cue to come in. It's so unbelievably.
And again,
this is the way you either have to be really bad or really good with movies, right? Even the really, really bad ones you can laugh at because they are purposely bad. This one was trying to be good, and it's in that perfect place right in between that just gets you really pissed off in that they're trying to build a plot here, and then they just ruin it with like completely unrealistic climaxes. And I'm just upset. I don't know how else to put it.
Plus an ending, which I guess they thought was a happy ending, where we're meant to have seen some kind of transformation of the protagonist, some kind of redemption that he's going to change his ways and we're meant to suddenly like him. And that is that he rescues a dog, says goodbye to Oscar, the poker room manager, and Stacy, goes to see his ex and decides he's not actually going to have any contact with his daughter or be there for her in any meaningful way. He's just going to leave a bag of money because that's what his role in her life is.
That's a great message. Your dad's out of your life. Your ex-husband, your ex-boyfriend is out of your life, but here's some money as compensation because money cures everything. And we didn't even see him pay off the damn blueberry cupcake pancake cashier woman. Like, what happened to her?
Who needs a dad when you can leave money? Unaccounted for, undepositable, dirty blood money. Like, literally, people got killed over it. Thanks, Dad. Thanks a lot. This is so much better than you actually being here in my life. And, by the way, that dog he rescues, he leaves it in the car when he goes in the casino. That shit doesn't fly.
In Las Vegas, in the summer.
That's right. He's a monster.
So, in totality, this movie was, if Breaking Bad, because it had very like blood money, death by gun and all sorts of like mafia connections, it was, if Breaking Bad was a Skidamax porn back in the day when Cinemax used to do those after midnight terribly acted pornography movies where you're just waiting for those 17 minutes to go by so you can see the softcore porn. Imagine if Breaking Bad was spoofed as a Skidamax movie from the early 2000s is how I would put this in synopsis.
I wrote directed by Justin Steele, which sounds like one of those names of the Skidamax movie directors. Like, that's exactly the sort of thing.
You get the show.
Yes. And then, I would just add this. And they made the main character for some reason dress like Kid Rock. Like, why is he dressed like Kid Rock for the entire movie? It does not make any sense. It's so, even Seagal's character is like, your outfit is stupid. Oh, no, wait, it's Ted Levine. He's like, take your dumb hat off.
So on the small list of positives, and I emphasize the word small, Ted Levine, I did like the plot twist with the backfiring gun. And again, I would highlight that Seagal is not the worst thing about this movie. He actually is okay. Again, it's all relative compared to other Seagal movies. Also, I did feel that the opening credits and the title song looked like they'd walked in from a different movie. I didn't think either was top class, but they were decent, but didn't fit in any way with the style, tone, or content of this movie.
I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that the titles and the song were AI enhanced. Were fed through an AI machine.
Even back in 2014?
Oh, is that how old this movie is? No, I guess it probably wasn't possible then. Sorry, I didn't realize this was a 2014 movie. Okay, now that explains why Steven Seagal isn't as fat as I was expecting.
Yeah, it's hard to see, though, because he does sit down in most of his scenes, and you only see him from, like, kind of, like, the chest up in all of his other scenes.
So I actually have to retroactively change some opinions here. Knowing that this movie is from 2014, you kind of have to judge cinema based on the era from which it is from. And I think for 2014, it was a different time back then. It was a different... Rob's shaking his head. He's not buying this at all.
They had Avatar out by then.
2014, I think this is a perfectly 2014 movie. I think this is an 8.5, actually.
You're thinking of like 1997, not 2014. That Volvo they were driving was from the 80s.
Dude, there was so much stuff with the car. Like, in the beginning of the movie where he kicks the car door closed and he sets off his own alarm and just walks into the casino, that was a little odd. The fact that he keeps trying to unlock the door even though he has the keys, I mean, who does that?
All of these efforts in the movie to make him in some way funny, likable, charming, just fail time after time to the point where, as I said, it would have been a happy ending if at the end of the movie Seagal had, like, you know, given him the backfiring gun, killed Ted Levine, and gone, now I'm going to collect my debt, bam, and put two shots in his head, roll credits. In that case, 8.5, 100%.
Well, Stapes, you brought up Kid Rock, and this was going to be how I finished off like my review of this movie. It's not Kid Rock. He doesn't dress like Kid Rock. This was Grandma from Rounders. You can make the case that this was the prequel to Rounders for Grandma specifically, because he leaves town. He goes to New York. He starts his loan business out there. He's wearing the same hat and stupid-ass vest that you can pick up from Party City. And tell me that this is now Grandma running KGB's game.
Oh, my God. This is canon. This is officially the Rounders prequel that we've all been waiting for.
They just didn't want to tell you.
This is fantastic. Rob, I knew you were the perfect guy for this. I knew you'd be... I'm sorry I put you through it, but also worth it to hear these rants and these theories. And who knows? Maybe I saved you for 90 minutes extra at whatever game you were at last night. Maybe that would have been your gut shot straight bad beat. So who knows?
That's quite the tease right there. Like that should be setting up further conversation. But yeah, I put it on like the side as I was trying to do something else, and the movie was so bad that I ended up just like my neck hurt because it was to the left. It was that second screen experience, and for an hour and a half, my head was tilted like straight 45 degrees to the left watching this terrible movie, because they keep bringing me back in with like these scenes of I have to figure it out for myself. So if you're listening to this, watching this, whatever, I mean, it's the type of movie that you can't get high for, you can't get drunk for. To one of those Meet the Spartans examples, like you go into that knowing that it's going to be a parody of a parody, right? It's making fun of parodies and it's meant to be bad. So if you go in with that mentality, you could actually enjoy it. This one is pretending to be an Academy Award winning film, or is aspiring to be, with the execution of insert terrible movie here. So I'm
good
just
shot straight.
I'm not going to hear another word said against this Rounders prequel, but Rob, sorry once again. Thank you once again. Very much appreciate not just the time you spent watching this piece of shit, but also talking about it today.
I'll never be the same. Thanks, guys.
Sadly and tragically, we are not done with the movie Gut Shot Straight. It is the subject of this week's Superfan Quiz, so it's time to introduce this week's super fan. Logan Hunt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Oh, Logan. All right. What? Tell us a little bit about yourself. You sound a little different.
Yeah. It is evening for me. So I'm living in London, but I'm from New Zealand. So moved over here at the end of last year.
Right. For what reason? Yeah. Tell us more.
Oh, well, we're quite far away in New Zealand, so mainly just to be able to travel around Europe and whatnot. It takes us like 4 hours to fly to Australia, so it's nice to be a short flight to Europe. And yeah.
So this is just like a chunk of your life that you're just going to like see more of the world as a young man. You seem like a young man and you're just going to sort of, it's like a, I don't know what you call it. A sabbatical away from New Zealand for a couple of years.
Exactly. Yeah. We call it overseas experience, an OE. But yeah, it's a very common thing for the Kiwis to do. Yeah. 2 year visa. So hopefully 2 years in the UK and then see where I go from there.
And are you working while you're traveling or online poker? What's your deal?
I wish I could play online poker as a job, but yeah, no, I'm an accountant. So I just work at a bank here in London. Very boring.
Well, the good news is we are going to give you the opportunity to hopefully play some online poker, because when we set the Superfan subject, Logan, 2x$109 bronze power passes are on the table. That's what you are playing for in this quiz. And I think it's only fair that we increase the prize pool, considering that we made you watch this terrible movie.
Yeah, fair enough. I almost fell asleep in it, to be honest.
So, all right. So we just got done talking about the movie at length. But if you want to take your shot at just how much you liked or did not like this movie, go for it.
I was pretty tired the other night when I watched it, which was convenient because there's not a lot of depth in the storyline. It's a pretty easy watch for me. I was glad with the runtime. I think getting in and out in about just over an hour is perfect.
That's always a bad sign when you're like, at least it was short. Well, hopefully you were paying attention a little bit, because I've just been talking about this movie for the last hour, and I kind of feel like I'm a bit of a favorite in this Superfan versus Stapes. So,
okay. Well, obviously the only advantage you get, Logan, is going first. So you get to pick the first question. 1 through 10 is on the board, is available. So please give me a number.
Perfect. Number 7, please, James.
Always coming 7. And this has a bonus attached. Ooh. So by default, Joe, you're going to get question 6, which is the other question with a bonus.
All right. Cool.
At the strip club, Duffy bets Jack $500 that he can't what? Multiple choice options are available if you need them.
I'm going to have to take the choices.
Okay. He bets Jack $500 that he can't open a beer bottle with some bills, steal a bottle of vodka, get the waitress's number, or guess what Duffy does for a living?
Option A, the first one.
It is indeed. That's right. He has to open a beer bottle with some bills. So the bonus question is, for double or nothing, what does Duffy challenge Jack to do?
He challenges him to take a glass bottle using only his hands.
Correct. So you get the bonus point as well. So 1 point and 1 point, that's 2. Joe, there's a possible 3 points available.
Whoa.
Here.
All right.
Question number 6. What is the name of the red-headed bank teller or loan woman, whatever you want to call her, who Jack tries to bribe with dessert in order to secure a loan?
Grace.
Would you like to take the multiple choice options?
Fine, I'll take the multiple choice options.
Is it Kelly, Rosie, Amelia, or Christy?
Kelly, Rosie, Amelia, or Christy? I really don't know this. Kelly, Rosie, Amelia, or Christy? Kelly.
It is Kelly for 1 point. That means you do get the bonus question. What's the name of the manager who then comes to back her up when she says, "No, Jack, you can't have any more money"?
Bob.
No, it was Chuck. So 2-1 the score.
No,
after the first round. Questions 6 and 7 have gone. What would you like for your second question, Logan?
I'll go number 1.
Number 1. What cards does Jack have when he slow rolls the lady after telling his "Do you want my chip" story? Suits not required. I just need to know the 2 cards he is holding.
5-6 offsuit.
5-6 to make the gut shot straight. Yes, that's 2 points.
The titular Joe, line.
What would you like?
I'll take question number... Is 3 available? Sorry, I don't pay attention.
3 is available.
Great, thank you.
Question 3. Where is Jack's daughter really excited to go with Jack?
I guess I will have to take... Oh! I don't know the specific name. I'll have to take the choices.
Is it Pink Castle, D Deja Vu, Princess Palace, The Casino.
Princess Palace.
Princess Palace for 1 point. 4-2 the score. You have a 2-1 advantage going into the next round, Logan.
We know that she's going to end up at Deja Vu eventually after this movie, by the way. But,
2, 4, 5, 8, 9, or 10.
I'll go number 10.
How many wives is Duffy on?
He's on his fourth wife.
He is indeed for 2 points. And Joe,
you're predicted up. That line, by the way, when he goes, you were wrong about one thing. I look at my girlfriend, I go, he's on his fourth wife. Boom! Got it. Oh, you nice. Got that too, Patrick? Nice. All right, here we go. I'll take number 9. Give me 9.
Number 9. What pet does Duffy have?
Duffy has a dog.
He does for 2 points. Whew. Some of them are easy. Some
tough,
of them are hard.
A dog that was raised on hard love.
Absolutely. 2, 4, 5, or 8?
Number 2 this time.
Okay. What is the name of Duffy's brother?
Lewis.
For 2 points.
Oh, you know what that just reminded me of? I didn't talk about this earlier. One of the funniest things about this movie, so I was watching with the subtitles on because like the sound was pretty bad. And they did the you are mistake at a certain point.
No.
Yeah, like tell me you are name. What's your name? And I was like, perfect.
Oh, come on.
It's a cherry on top for this movie.
So I will often watch movies with the subtitles on, especially on a plane where obviously there's a lot of background noise. The Apple rental version of this movie does not have subtitles available. Well, what can you expect for 99p for 48 hours? 4, 5, or 8, Joe?
5, please.
Question number 5. Who directed the film?
Justin Steele.
He did. Logan, you're still ahead by 2 points, so if you can get 2 points here, you're in the clear. In fact, if you can get 1 point here, you're in the clear. 8 or 4?
Number 4.
Question number 4. What is the full name of Steven Seagal's character?
Oh, fuck.
Paulie Trunks.
Paulie Trunks for the full 2 points.
I would have had to take the choices and then maybe even still might not have gotten it.
Okay, Joe, let's just close this out with question 8.
Yeah.
Name the actor who plays Jack.
George Eads.
Indeed. So in the end, you only lost by 2 points. 8 points for Joe, 10 points for Logan. You have won Superfan versus Stapes. You are going to get 2 bronze power passes, and you're going to get some Poker in the Ears merch. Logan, I hope that makes it worth it, giving up 90 minutes of your life to watch this terrible film. The fact that you've managed to get some value out of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Maybe I can split it up and we can get to UK IPT London or something.
That's exactly
fantastic.
What I was about to suggest. We got UK IPT London coming up and just, by the time this airs, it won't be that far away. So, run it up. Win yourself a silver pass.
No, we'll try my best.
Logan, thank you very much for volunteering to watch this awful movie. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Cool. Thanks, team. Have a good one.
All right, my babies, we're just about out of time for our first summer special. Coming up next time, our second summer special, where we will be speaking to new PokerStars ambassador, Kenny Hallert.
Yeah, now this episode is going to drop right at the end of July, by which point everyone has had plenty of time to watch the first 5 episodes of The Big Game on Tour. They're on the PokerStars YouTube channels. So we're going to also recap. And we're also going to preview the next run, the second table, the second lineup, when we'll reveal who is playing at that table.
Table 1, there'll be spoilers. Table 2, no table 2 spoilers because none of us has seen it yet. I haven't seen it yet.
Correct.
I don't even know what happens. Anyway, yes. That's all the time we do have for this week's show. Hop on the Discord. It'll be a great way to keep in touch with us over the summer. We would like you, if you want to introduce some new people to the show, we need new super fans. They can win shit. Get them on board. But for now, that is all the time we have got for summer special number 1. For James Hartigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.